You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
If there are any newcomers here, welcome to West Hill, and I would encourage you to pick up one of these out on the table just inside the front door. It tells you a little bit about what's going on here at West Hill, what we're about, and gives you references on how to find out more about us as well.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
We're going to be in Edmonton at a conference, and Greta's one of the speakers, and I'm bringing some of the music. And I've played in many places now because of the work. You are so good. I love playing here for you. There's such heart and warmth. You may not think you're a soloist, but that's not it. It's what you bring to lifting something up like that. That's very special, and I'm sure other people enjoy their singing. But I'll take you anywhere. That's just beautiful. Thank you. The idea of grounded and guided and growing. I was looking at pictures of this, and sometimes I'll put pictures. Last week it was pictures of trees and rootedness, and you can change these in any way you want. You can be grounded in love and guided by wisdom and growing in the interconnections, and it's not a formula, it's just ideas. But all we do at this time is to settle back into those big, as Kevin was mentioning, big truths that we discover together, that it is our connection where we have that impact that wins our attention and strikes us with awe and terror and responsibility and joy. And then how to do it better, little by little, big steps by big steps. Reversals, fall flat on our face. There's no place I'd rather fall flat on my face than this place here, because I know arms would wrap around me and we'd get up again. So it's just a time to do that. I'm just going to play for a bit as you sink into those big, big, wonderful, demanding truths.
We talked about truths and how they incorporate into your own faith model. If you've felt a transition in your worldview and you wish to mark that occasion, I invite you to tie a ribbon on the tree of transformation on the back wall. And we also have a prayer rack here with ribbons available if you have a prayer for someone in your life and you wish to symbolize that with a ribbon, please do so. We have three readings today. First one is from Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist and a professor of ethical leadership, and he applies his research in moral psychology to business ethics. When a group of people makes something sacred, the members of the cult lose the ability to think clearly about it. Morality binds and blinds. It binds us into ideological teams that fight each other as though the fate of the world depended on our side winning the battle. It blinds us to the fact that each team is composed of good people who have something important to say. Jonathan Haidt from Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, offered as wisdom for the journey.
May we walk in this light.
Franz Kafka, he explored the concepts of realism, juxtaposed against fantasy or fantastic, the fantastic. He died at early age of 40 from tuberculosis just over 100 years ago. If the book we are reading doesn't shake us awake like a blow to the head, well then why bother reading it in the first place? A book must be the axe for the frozen sea within us. Franz Kafka, in a letter dated 1904. Third reading, last reading. Ted Gabsby is a corporate director and consultant on the complexity and decision making. Oversimplifying is the first grave mistake we make when confronted by complexity. Overconfidence is the second, and there is a third. Based on our overconfidence and in our oversimplified conclusions, we overreact. Ted Gadsby, Closing the Mind Gap, Making Smarter Decisions in a Hyper-Complex World, offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
So the theme today is hard truths, which I've heard picked up by a couple of people already in the service. Thank you for doing that. And so the focus moment comes out of that, and I want you to settle yourselves into the space before I begin it. So imagine that you are in a situation where you're thinking about making a difficult decision. And in order to train you to do that, you're given opportunities to explore difficult decisions. And so this is what's going on in your mind. Damn, that's a tough one. Something I didn't expect, that's for sure. I never even considered it. But there you have it. Or should I say, here I have it. Here, right here, awaiting my response. Okay, I'm cool. I don't need to make a move just yet. I could keep my head. I'll break this down into a few parts and think it over, or should I say, rationalize what I've already decided. I can make my peace with what I'm going to do. In fact, I don't even need to justify it. Not to you, not to anybody. I don't even need to justify it to me. I'm decided, and that's that. Your complimentary 30-minute mind cleanse has come to an end. Your making difficult decisions selection is one of our top 10 options, chosen by individuals in corporate management, government, and universal order maintenance. Please remember to rate your experience. Remain in your seat while we share our subscription options with you. We look forward to serving you as you develop our highly recommended weekly mind cleanse routine in the future. Have a lovely mind cleansed day. So hard truths. As I was focusing on that theme, the focus moment obviously came out of some of the work that is done around how we make our decisions. And often studies show that we make our decisions before we actually think about them. And once we've made them, then we rationalize them. So if you took a program on how to make difficult decisions, it might mean moving it from your gut to your head and having to think about it first before you make those decisions. But hard truths come to us in two different ways, and we respond to them, and those are the decisions that I'm talking about making. How do we respond to those hard truths as they confront us? And I broke it up into two kinds of hard truths. There are hard truths that come upon us suddenly, often from beyond us, and we have no control over them. And they are situations where our lives are impacted in a significant way, if they're very personal, in a general way, along with a lot of people, if they're broader than that. But there's very little that we can actually do to change the situation. It's changed for us, and we've been told. And we may find that our whole life has been uprooted, changed, in the blink of an eye. Something is brought to us, and we have to cope with it. And we can think of a number of large ways in which this happens: the death of a loved one or family member, the breakdown of a relationship when you haven't had the foggiest clue what has happened, a job change when suddenly you're unemployed, you've been, you know, made redundant, or whatever the technical words are at this point in time. There's a shift in government, and suddenly someone is in power that suddenly starts to create all kinds of rules and laws that infringe on your human rights or on human rights of others about which you are concerned. Things happen that create, there's catastrophic change in the community because of some kind of weather event or a breakdown of some system upon which everyone relies, and suddenly you're faced with the fact that A, you have no money, and B, you have no water, and C, you've got no electricity, and you absolutely have no idea what to do about it. So there are hard truths with which we are forced to cope on a regular basis. Maybe not that regular, those catastrophic ones that I'm talking about, but there are hard truths that come to us from outside that we don't have control over. I was thinking about this in terms of preparing for my walk as well, and going through the stages of grief that those hard truths would impose upon you. And those of you who got my letter yesterday about that walk, who have donated in the past, will know that I talked about those stages of grief that were popularized by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I shouldn't say popularized, she identified them, and there's been development about them, and some say that they're not comprehensive, and some say, but anyway. But they're well known that the stages in grief are denial, that's not really happening, there's anger, there's bargaining, there's depression, and then finally there's acceptance. And so when something horrific happens to you, you don't really believe that it's happening to you. So, what? Like, really? I'm fired? Actually, that's not funny, is it? Anyway, well, but we realize that there are these stages that we'll go through, and often Kubler-Ross said, you don't go through them like in a straight line. It's like this cyclical thing. They come back and wash over you again. You get through the bargaining stage and then to somewhere else, and then you go back and say, no, we've got to be able to work this out. And all of that emotion comes. And as Scott and I talk often about the idea of acceptance and the idea that we should just accept difficult things, that we should find a way to say, I accept that even though it's terrible. And there's times when that is absolutely inappropriate, when acceptance is not helpful at all, when we find that things are wrong and we can't actually accept them. And so Scott and I have talked about shifting the words of the Serenity Prayer. He talks about people with it at work where it's suggested that they should accept a situation that has happened in their lives. And Scott has said, no, it's not so much that you have to accept it. There are things that are unacceptable. We have to find a way to live with it. Someone sent me a book manuscript to review, and I only got about the first three pages of the book, and I loved the premise, but the first chapter was on forgiveness and how we're just supposed to forgive people who have wronged us in the past. Just get your head around forgiveness and you'll be that much better and you can move on. I don't agree with that. I don't think that we should be forced to hold on to
the responsibilities for those things and the guilt that being unable to forgive brings to us. It's like a second victimization, in my opinion. Certainly, there are many things for which we need to forgive one another, right, honey? Absolutely. But there are some things that are so egregious that happen, and often to children who, as adults, are trying to, you know, cope with the idea that they're supposed to forgive. And maybe that's not the healthiest way to go. So acceptance, which is a big part of forgiveness, is maybe not something that I'm going to condone in every single situation. Hard reality, we have to accept. You know, when someone leaves you through divorce or writing you out of their lives or death, there is an element of that that has to be accepted, and that's a reality. But there are others that we don't just decide we're going to live with and we fight against, and you see that welling up in America as people cohere into groups that may never have come together before, but who are coming together now to speak out about some of the issues that are rising there, and we'll continue to do them here as well. But the other way that our world changes is with consciousness raising. When we become aware of something, or someone tells us something, or we read a book, as Kafka said in that quote, you read something that just opens your eyes to the world in a different way, and exposes you to hard truths that have been out there all the time. You just hadn't ever seen them. You hadn't found them on your own. And that's some of what Scott was talking about when he was in the sharing time. But we all find ourselves comfortably ensconced in our lives until someone tells us something that we really didn't want to hear, right? I don't want to know that. I don't want to know that this is happening in the world. I don't want to have to put that into my worldview. Don't you know I carry enough on my shoulders as it is? Why add that to it? The reality is, it's a reality. So our consciousness can be raised a little bit at a time, just a little bit at a time, and we have to find ourselves in a new world. But what often happens, and this is the other reading that Jonathan Haidt, and then the reading about complexity, as soon as someone introduces us to another thought, whether it's a book or a poem or a song or a protest, and we're introduced to, oh, wait a minute, that's introduced not just a new thought, but complexity into our lives. Like, my life isn't simple anymore because now there's this other competing thing that is going to challenge me to live in a different way, and or to go out there and to be on base for somebody that I didn't even know was in trouble before, a whole group of people that I have to be there for. And so it introduces complexity. And so he notes that the things that we do when complexity hits is we oversimplify it. That's the first thing we do. We say, okay, so it's this, right? We don't take time to recognize the nuances of it. So in a situation where we hear, oh, 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Well, you know, like, that's huge. Like, you know, so I can't really, you know, I didn't live then. I didn't do any of those things. That obviously has to be dealt with those people. And when they can bring it, distill it down to just one thing or two that maybe I can handle, bring it back to me. So we oversimplify it. We make it someone else's fault. We make it someone else's issue. It doesn't affect us, and we can go back on our merry way again and leave the 94 ribbons, the 160 ribbons, actually, on the back table and not have to think about them anymore. They were an adornment that we worked out on the 25th of June, and dealing with them is really, you know, not a big issue. So we overreact. We oversimplify things. Then we have overconfidence about it. And this is the Jonathan Haidt part that I love. When we've made a decision by our gut, usually because of disgust or previous prejudices or things like that, and we just know we have to move in a certain direction, we just know that we're going to make a decision, and that's what the little focus moment was. We make a decision that we're going to act in a certain way, and then we start building our argument for it. And this is one of the things you've had Christopher DiCarlo here speaking in the past, and I love the way he deals with this, because he'll invite someone to have a conversation with him, or he'll be on a panel somewhere, and they have all of their ideas so beautifully honed. They've thought it through for years. Some of them may even have written books on it. And Christopher will sit there, and he'll just ask them a question. And they'll answer the question, and then he'll ask them another question, and they'll answer it. And he'll ask them another question, and they'll answer it. And you can see him slowly pointing out the fact that this entire rationalization that they have built up is built entirely on some kind of prejudice or some original belief that they had that they can't substantiate at all. And so he just takes a brick down, and he takes another brick down. And sometimes they're big bricks, but sometimes they're only those little, you know, four little dot Lego pieces. And it's a very slow process. But watching him do it is like watching an artist, right? He just dismantles an argument until the person is sputtering because they haven't figured out how to replace it yet. And they'll probably leave and put it all back into place, and that's fine. But Christopher has introduced to them something that's going to raise their consciousness just a little bit. And once your consciousness is on the rise, it's not a comfortable place to be, right? It just keeps moving, and it's often moving up. And once it's up there, you don't get to drag it back down. And so Christopher has this gift of just awakening people, just holding that mirror up to them and letting them see what their argument really looks like, and then giving them the opportunity to find another way to have that conversation. So the simplification is when we just say, oh, that's it, and then we come up with the ideas that respond to it. But we often overreact as well, and that might be by hightailing it out of reality and creating a world that we can live in, that we can cope with. Or it may be confronting that reality with some kind of a massive response that's not going to be taken well. So that a hammer response to something that requires maybe some pliers or something. So if we hightail it out of reality, and we do that all the time, how many people here know some of the things that Shelley would have seen in that movie? We've all seen it. We all know those facts. We all live lifestyles in a first world country that consumes at a rate that is gargantuous compared to how most of the world lives, most of the population of the world lives, or certainly a vast portion of the population lives. A child born in Canada or the United States or the UK, you know, will consume more resources in the first 4 years of life than most children born in India or parts of Africa. So we know all this stuff, but we tend to bubble ourselves in our lives and try not to think about it at least 23 and a half hours of the day. And that other half, we're sort of building those arguments, protecting ourselves and our ideas about it. We don't want that kind of information to seep into our consciousness too much, because it's going to make us change our lives. Scott will freak out entirely when he hears that I googled on Amazon this week the zero waste household. Seriously, I did, right? We think we have to change our roof, and I'm like, okay, we have to find out where we can recycle our asphalt roof tiles. Okay, so we have to, what do we do about that carpeting that's still in the, you know, like, there are people who think these things through. I know perfectly well I wouldn't put Scott through that. I don't think. But we have those issues in front of us that we need to deal with. What do we do with our consumption? How do we control it? Where does it end up? We decide we don't need it anymore. How much plastic do we need in our lives, right? And I'm just as guilty as the other person, right? We tend to anesthetize ourselves to the results of our behavior. So the ways that we deal with these truths, these hard truths, affect us and affect our relationships, affect our communities, and affect the world. So how do we deal with them? The first kind of hard truth that imposes itself upon us, an illness or a death or a shift in life that is imposed because of a number of factors, we respond to it, sure, using those same kinds of grief processes, but we have to build a life around ourselves. I don't think there's a person in this room that hasn't lost someone that they loved, or that hasn't had a diagnosis that took the breath out of them, or hasn't found that a step that they took was one that cost them way more than they ever intended for it to cost. We've all had the experiences of loss. We've all had the experiences of that hard truth of having to live our life in a different way than we did before because of something that happened out there that was so critical to who we are that it completely changed how we live. And I could tell you how to cope in those situations, but I think you know how to do that. Because I think that not only is it built into us in some kind of weird evolutionary way, but we have survival at our most central. That's one of our most central things. We're a living being on this planet, and every living being, its most singular effort is put into survival or reproducing its DNA. That's what it's here about, from grass and ants and those spiders I want to get rid of in the backyard, to those of us who have very highly complex lives. We want to survive. We want to pass our DNA on. We want to continue the human project. And so when we run into those horrifically demanding times when it seems nothing is ever going to make sense again, something clicks inside us and tells us, you're not over yet. You don't get to walk away from this. You don't get to just shut your door and stop breathing. You've got this. You've got a sense of humor one day that you thought you'd never, ever touch again. You laugh when someone says something. Or you watch a child in a grocery store act out and it makes you think, oh yeah, I remember that. Or someone shows up at your door because, you know, they've run out of gas or I don't know what, and you offer them something. Or a person on the street, Jean Hamill maybe, smiles at you, and you smile back. It's not that you have to think of ways to survive. Your body and your DNA and your brain and everything is going to push you towards that. You have to open yourself to it. That's all you have to do, is open yourself to it. To, as I say when I'm doing a memorial service, to let life take you in her arms and dance again. That's what you need to do in those situations. And we stumble ourselves toward it, and we refuse it, and we don't want to participate, and we find ourselves finding people who can help us make that next step. And we keep going. But it seems to be a totally different process when it comes to consciousness raising. When those hard truths are upon us, it seems a totally different process. It's almost like we hunker down in order to survive. We deny it in order to survive. And I want to question that. I want to challenge us to think beyond that. Because I think that it should be the same thing. Rather than hunkering down and not wanting to hear it and trying to protect ourselves, we need to think about that evolutionary drive, which is the reproduction of our DNA, which is the survival of the human family, which is not this generation. Clearly, it's not this generation. We've had kids. I mean, anybody in this room who's had a kid has had some kind of faith in the next generation and some kind of faith in the generation after that. So these hard truths that hit us, particularly the ones that are about global climate change or about resource depletion or about population explosion or about economic instability and the change of the job force and the loss of jobs by technology and the... Scott, stop me. I could go on forever. We want to cocoon ourselves against them. But I think we have to be brave enough to get back to that singular impulse that is ours. To allow humanity to continue and thrive. And that has to somehow pull us outside of our own protective self, pull us beyond our instinctual response, oversimplification, overreaction, pull us into the possibility of life in the future, taking us in her arms and asking us to dance for life we will not ever see. And I'm talking about extremes because our consciousness is raised about small things that are home as well. And maybe they can teach us how to take those larger steps. But the impulse, I think, remains the same. We want life to be rich, not just for ourselves, but for all. And not just for now, but forever. And so we look and we take a step. We smile at someone. We encourage someone else. We provide the opportunity to change our own selves. And we invite others to change their selves. And we find that consciousness growth a little less painful every day. You don't get to the zero waste household overnight. Sometimes we won't even get there. Most of us will never get there. That's fine. But how do we make sure that we are not the last generation that lived with this kind of privilege, that had the gift of Franz Kafka's books to read at our leisure, who were able to find the foods that would sustain our bodies and revel in taking hours to prepare a meal just because of the enjoyment of doing it? We can't be that last generation. Our children can't be that last generation. And so as our consciousness is raised about those things that have implications for those future generations, may we find ways to reach out to one another the way we do when confronted with horrific, personal, hard truths in an instant. May we find ways to reach out to one another and learn the opportunities that forward can bring. Learn the opportunities that our deepest instincts might call us to. There are many hard truths out there. They're there for the reading, as Kafka would say. But they are also there to open us to engagement, to conversation, to possibility, and to commitment. And may we find ways to do all of those things, both in this place, amongst ourselves, and beyond this place, as we engage the world. Thank you. often talk about being the light of the world here, recognizing that each person born into this world has the opportunity to be light to it. And we have symbols that we use here. And the book that rooted our tradition, the Bible, talks about, if you're a light, you'd never put a light under a bushel. You'd never, snuff it out. You'd put it up on a hill and share it with people. You are light. You cannot be dimmed. You cannot not know what you know. You cannot compromise who you are by living under some kind of a cover that doesn't let people see what it is you have to offer. Even when what it is you have to offer is maybe a hard truth to someone. So I invite you to go out there and shine. The days are getting shorter. You're going to need to shine brightly. So go out there and be all the light you can be. And when someone's light finds a place of you you didn't want to know about, open yourselves to that too. Because we are all light and hidden darknesses. And we have much to learn and much to share. Go from this place in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.